Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
This is Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Jared Hill. You toss recyclable trash into a blue bin and it ends up in a place like this. A recycling center. This one is owned by the city of Burbank. Here, workers sort out the metal, the cardboard, the glass, the plastic, and whatever else you might think is recyclable.
We get chunks of furniture, we get wood, bricks, rocks, we get sand, dirt. We get needles all the time. We get compressed tanks, butane, propane. We get lighters. We get batteries that have been pulled out of electronics. And these lithium-ion batteries are just crazy fire hazards for us.
That's Craig Hampel. He runs the recycling center. And he's watched the industry change a lot. He says in the 1980s, people were really motivated to recycle. Also, a lot of our garbage could be recycled back then.
I'm going to call it the happy days of recycling. And materials were much, much simpler then. We didn't have all the composite and laminates. We didn't have these stand-up pouches that are plastic. We didn't have the little squeeze drinks, you know, for kids with the little nipples on them and all that kind of stuff. And the other thing is that we were still buying in larger packages. We weren't buying all this single-serving package material. So our packaging has gone up exponentially in the last few decades. And it's a long, and I'm going to just say it's a sad story in the way that we eat, in the way that we dispose, and the way that we're living. This is unsustainable.
It's been decades since recycling became a part of our daily lives. After all, we care about the environment, and recycling promised we could live comfortably with the downside of our throwaway culture. But recycling has not lived up to that promise. KCRW's Warren Olney has been reporting on the unintended consequences of our love affair with plastics and how the promise of recycling may be failing.
Over the past year, China has almost stopped accepting America's recycled products and the bottoms gone out of the market. No fewer than 284 redemption centers in California closed last month. At the same time, there's been a massive increase in the production of plastic. Nobody knows that better than Craig Hempel.
We're supposed to be reducing waste first, but that's not where we've gone. We've gone directly to creating more waste and depending on recycling to clean it up.
The promise of recycling helped generate a massive increase in the production of plastic. More than half of all plastic was manufactured in the past 13 years. Now, Hempel says, it's time for another look at our throwaway culture.
So what's become very healthy right now, and it's encouraging to me as a recycler, is that the conversation is going upstream and the questions are being asked, why do we have so much disposable junk? And if you start digging into that side of the equation, you'll see that, you know, this has been a very manipulated marketplace and that it's not as innocent as you might think. So the manufacturers that are pumping this stuff out also have a lot of PR power. And they have basically, you know, tried to convince everyone that this is recyclable.
It turns out that just 9% of all plastic ever gets recycled. And much of what's being manufactured now is for one use only. It's not recyclable in the first place. And some ends up in landfills. The rest is polluting the land, the rivers and oceans. It's even ending up in the bodies of fish and plants and animals. Some California legislators are pushing for drastic action.
Well, we've got to get our handle on this situation. The whole waste management system is in a bit of a free fall crisis.
That's Democratic State Senator Ben Allen of Santa Monica. He's pushing Senate Bill 54. It would reduce waste by phasing out almost all single-use, non-recyclable products by the year 2030. Not just straws and grocery bags, but so-called clamshells with those convenient lids to hold fruits and vegetables, and bottles for water and other beverages.
And this is the only way we're going to help to shore up the recycling system and just create a more sustainable product use system for the state.
How do you do that? Manufacturers produce what they produce. They package it the way they want to do it. How can you control them all?
Well, we've got to work with those manufacturers. And you know, the truth of the matter is there are little things the manufacturers can do to make their products much more likely to make their way into the circular economy, into the recycling stream, into the reusing stream, into the composting stream. But you're absolutely right. Right now, it's a free-for-all. Everyone is off doing their own thing, and there's no responsibility on the manufacturer side. And so if we had a little bit more coordination, we could actually start to get a handle on this. This is what they're doing up in British Columbia right now, where the ministry there is working very closely with the manufacturers and holding them both accountable, but also putting them in charge of creating a much more circular system. And they've been able to dramatically reduce their waste as a result.
SB 54 and others like it are anything but a slam dunk. We reached out to Californians for Recycling and the Environment, a group representing the packaging industry, for their comment. They declined. They've publicly argued that health protection devices, from baby bottles to toothpaste tubes, require single-use plastic. Plastics makers have a powerful lobby, including the oil and gas industry, since plastics are made from petroleum. Negotiations over a package of bills are still going strong. The deadline to enact the ban might be extended from 2030 to 2035. But even the American Chemistry Council says we're on the same page. And Senator Allen insists that California can prioritize sustainability because the technology's already there.
What it does is it pushes the manufacturers to have more sustainable products and packaging. The truth of the matter is in nearly every case, there is already a more sustainable alternative to the same everyday packaging that we use. And we need to move people toward those products. It's similar to, you know, to automobiles, right? When in LA, kids were growing up with half of the lung capacity of kids in other parts of the country because the air quality was so bad. We said to the automobile manufacturers, you have to do better. You have to reduce the smog, the pollution created by your cars. We know you can do it. The technology is there. They kicked and screamed. They did it. And as a result, we have twice the number of people in LA and less air pollution. This is a similar situation here. We're not going to do away with the cars. We're not going to do away with the products and the packaging. What we're doing is working with the manufacturers to make sure that what they are putting out onto the market here in the state is going to work better with our recycling system.
Would new, sustainable packaging cost more for consumers? Allen says no, especially given what waste cleanup is costing taxpayers now.
Already, those stores that have switched to more sustainable packaging see like a cent or two increase in the consumer prices that they have to pass on to their consumers. The interesting thing is if we made this mass, if we scaled this, in the end of the day, we would be able to do it in a way that wouldn't significantly increase costs. And let me just say, we are already paying a tremendous amount as taxpayers and as citizens here in the state of California because of the current system. Local governments are spending about $500 million on litter and waste cleanup alone.
The League of California Cities is supporting Allen's legislation and companion bills. It's possible some version of those bills could be enacted by the end of this year. In the meantime, some local governments are adopting similar measures. The City Council of Solana Beach recently voted unanimously to ban the sale of single-use plastic items unless they're compostable or recyclable. Even boogie boards are now subject to regulation. They won't be allowed in the ocean unless they're encased in hard materials that keep them from breaking apart. Warren Olney, KCRW News.
And a special thanks to producer John Reed for contributing to this story.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
So Warren mentioned that there is a bill being considered in the state legislature right now. That's SB 54, written by State Senator Ben Allen. But that's not the only legislation being considered right now. Nancy Schroeds works on policy and outreach for Heal the Bay. She's here to tell us about some of the other legislation in play right now. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, how's it going?
Very well. Thank you so much. So tell us about SB 54, first of all. It would phase out single-use plastic by when?
By 2030.
Okay, so does it look like it's going to pass?
I hope so. It's going to be heard on the floor this week, so hopefully it moves out and the governor will hopefully sign it.
Okay, and then there's also AB 1080, is that right? Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, that's actually a sister bill to the Senate bill. So it's actually just going through on the Assembly. And it's the same idea of making sure that we reduce our single-use packaging and our waste in California.
Okay, so San Francisco recently banned single-use plastic bottles at SFO. And locally, LA City Councilman Paul Krikorian is looking at doing something similar here. What's happening with that?
Yeah, so he approved a motion last week to go ahead and investigate phasing out the use of bottled waters in municipal facilities and municipal events by 2028. So investigating what that would look like and hopefully moving forward to make LA a more sustainable city.
How much of an impact could these bills have when it comes to places like the Santa Monica Bay or the piers and things like that?
They could have a huge impact. There is certainly a recycling crisis that we've experienced in the state and nationwide. And to reduce the amount of waste that we're using and producing will effectively reduce what we're seeing in our waterways and on our beaches.
Okay. And lastly, speaking of making an impact, I know that you all at Heal the Bay are trying to make an impact as well on September 21st. Tell us about Coastal Cleanup Day really quickly.
So Coastal Cleanup Day is on Saturday, September 21st. Heal the Bay is LA County's coordinator, and we are organizing over 70 sites all throughout the county where community members can go out to their local spots, their natural spaces, and clean up. This is an international effort, so it's a really awesome day of global action.
Really appreciate it. Okay, people can go to healthebay.org/CCD for Coastal Cleanup Day for more information. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
You bet. My pleasure.
Just to remind you of a couple of warrants, sobering statistics. Plastic was invented in the early 1900s, but more than half of all of the plastic ever made was manufactured in the last 13 years. And only about 9% of all that plastic actually gets recycled. Plastic is everywhere. And after Warren's report, you may be feeling like dealing with plastics is nearly hopeless. But turns out, it's not. There are some things we can do in our own lives as consumers to make a difference. Leslie Campbell heads up Sustain LA, and she's consulting with businesses and events on how to reduce their waste. She's here to help me kind of understand some of this. Hey, Leslie.
Hi, Jared. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for joining us. So say you've already done the basic things and you, you know, bought a reusable water bottle, you ditched the plastic bags. What's the next level when it comes to reducing your plastic waste?
I think looking around your household and seeing what plastic items still remain. But refills are a great opportunity to eliminate, you know, longer-term single-use items. Your laundry jug is great. It's been designed to dispense laundry liquid really well, and it's silly that we toss it out after, you know, one use. So finding a place where you can refill those items that you use every day is a great alternative.
Okay, so here at KCRW, we have a reporter who's trying to live without generating plastic waste for an upcoming story on Press Play next week. She noticed that one of the hardest things to figure out was, you know, prescriptions and things like that, because they always come in plastic. What are some of the things that you find really hard to find a plastic-free alternative for?
Food packaging is really tricky to avoid plastic and single use. When it was just my husband and I, we could avoid that plastic clamshell of raspberries. Because we didn't mind waiting until we could find it at a farmer's market package-free. Once we had our daughter, that was a little more difficult to explain to a young child that we're going to avoid that plastic clamshell packaging, especially when you're trying to get them to eat healthful fruit instead of sugary sweet snacks.
One of the specific things we were thinking about was like trash bags. Is there an alternative for better ways to take out your trash?
Well, yes. I think if you are still purchasing trash bags and need them, my best recommendation would be to look for trash bags with recycled content and as much recycled content as you can find. We have done a separation in our home where we compost, so all of the food waste is out of the trash, and then anything else that might be wet or gross, we put that in, like, the plastic bags that enter your life even when you're trying to keep them away, whether that's the rice cake bag or the bagel bag or the cereal bag. So our trash bin, actually, we don't use garbage bags, or we're still using the bags that came with the can originally, and we just continue to reuse that. So we just dump it into the black bin, and because there isn't the wet, gross stuff, you can just reuse the container.
So you're saying, like, you use the bags that you can't really avoid as trash bags instead of using, like, a big trash bag specifically?
Yes.
So what are some of the places in L.A. you frequently shop where you can buy things you need, like laundry detergent, shampoo, sunscreen, that aren't packaged in plastic?
For household cleaners and beauty care products, I go to my own store. Sustain L.A. is here in Highland Park. Venice has a pop-up refill shop, Recontained. And there is a mobile version also, Mar Vista, West Side area, called the Refillery LA. Here in Highland Park, there's Wild Terra, which is a bulk apothecary store with bulk teas and spices. Co-Opportunity in Culver City and Santa Monica is a great place for bulk food items.
That's really cool. Okay. Is there a cost increase to doing this? I mean, I can buy a shampoo at CVS for a few dollars. So, like, is there a difference in the pricing?
Yes, I think for health and beauty, there is going to be a difference. We source from sustainable companies with sustainable ingredients. And unfortunately, right now, because those products embody the full cost of the product, they are higher. They're going to have a higher price point. Those costs are not being externalized to the environment, to the workers, et cetera. For household cleaning, I think there are affordable opportunities for refills. I personally use vinegar for a lot of cleaning my floors, countertops. So one part vinegar to two parts water, and that's very affordable. We have vinegar in bulk for 4 cents an ounce. We also have an all-purpose cleaner that is highly concentrated at 30 cents an ounce, and that 1 ounce you can dilute with 1 gallon of water. So there are some alternatives that are zero waste that are less expensive, and there are some that are more expensive.
You've built your entire business around going zero waste. Is it possible for someone to follow in your footsteps without really dedicating, you know, their whole life to being zero waste?
I think the important part is to take it one step at a time, to be kind to yourself and look back after a month or so and see all that you've accomplished. But I think the part that takes the most time and effort are changing your systems and your routines. And once you're able to change those, we've found in our life that we actually spend less time on single-use disposables, less money, and we have more time to do the things that we love and enjoy.
Well, I really appreciate it. Leslie Campbell heads up the business Sustain LA and tries to live a zero-waste life. Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thank you, Jarrett. Thanks for your time.
By the way, the California legislature is also considering adding $10 million to helping struggling recycling centers. And there's another bill, AB 792, that would require beverage containers to contain no less than 75% recycled plastic content by 2035. So, by the way, I want to remind you, if you appreciate information like this, I just want to throw it out there that it takes support to make what we do here at KCRW possible. We have a special 2-day incentive for UnDrive Pledge Drive. If we can raise $25,000 by midnight tomorrow night, your pledge will be matched dollar for dollar, courtesy of KCRW board member Dylan Yoles. So now is a great time to increase your support or give an additional gift and make your dollars go twice as far for the station that you love. All that information is online at kcrw.com/join. Coming up next, Frances Anderson is coming in to talk to us about a very special exhibition at the Huntington Library. You're listening to KCRW's Greater LA. You're back with Greater LA. I'm Jared Hill. 100 years ago, 1919, was a breakthrough year for Los Angeles. Among the major LA institutions that launched that year, UCLA, the LA Philharmonic, United Artists Studio, Hollywood's classic bistro Musso and Frank, and the Huntington Library. To celebrate its centennial, the Huntington is kicking off a year-long series of exhibitions and other programs. And here to tell us all about it is one of my faves, KCRW's own Frances Anderson.
Jared.
No pressure.
And same right back at you.
Okay. So I have to admit, I did not know what the Huntington Library was before this story. Can you tell us what the Huntington Library is?
Well, first of all, let me say you're not alone there. LA is a massive region.
Yeah.
And the Huntington Library, its full name is the Huntington Library, Art Museum and Botanical Gardens.
A lot going on.
lot going on.
Yeah.
Vast collection of books. 12 themed gardens that are utterly incredible. If you want to take family and friends
wow.
somewhere and feel truly transported, go to the Huntington. Amazing art collections, all assembled initially by a very affluent Angelino called Henry Huntington mm-hmm. and his wife Arabella. In 1919, they dedicated their great collections to what would then become a growing institution that we now have the benefits of today. It's in San Marino, by the way, and what it is this expansive estate in the Mediterranean style with some additional buildings added on and these absolutely glorious gardens.
So you hear library and you think a bunch of books, but there's so much more going on over there.
Yeah, and the bunch of books are pretty significant books.
They're not just any old books.
They're not just any old books. No, Henry Huntington was used to be known as a bibliophile, mm-hmm. Back in the late 19th, early 20th century. Some people were passionate about books and he acquired some incredible collections. I mean, for example, he actually has one of 11 vellum copies of the Gutenberg Bible,
wow.
no less,
okay.
as well as letters and manuscripts by George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. They have
wow.
something like 11 million items.
I'm sorry,
there.
11 million?
I know, it's an insane number. And not only are they celebrating their centennial with a year of events and fun stuff to do, but they've also launched an exhibition
yeah.
that they have called 1919, marking that year that the institution was founded and dedicated to that year as a theme.
So let's talk about that year, 1919. Like we said, we got a big movie studio, the symphony, a state university, and this major private library and art museum in Huntington. What was it about that year? Why did LA suddenly break out that year?
Well, that's a very good question, because actually, if you think about what that year meant to millions of people around the world, it was a year of picking up the pieces after the utterly devastating World War One.
Mm-hmm.
People across Europe, across much of the world, were shattered. Millions of lives were lost. People were maimed, impoverished. It was a terrible time. But here on the West, there was a sense of the future. There was a sense of possibility. And Huntington, along with the founders of those other institutions, the sort of power elite of the day,
mm-hmm.
saw LA as going places.
Mm-hmm.
And Huntington, we have to say, was one of the biggest and most important contributors to that. We've talked about the institution he left for us, but really what he left for us also was an urban fabric, because this man owned railways and this man bought up real estate. One of the experts on this is Bill Deverell. He's a historian. He's based at USC and the Huntington. Listen to him now.
By around 1910 or thereabouts, Huntington had monopolized, or very nearly so, the transit system here in Los Angeles, the trolleys. And by doing so, he was able to build trolleys out to empty land because he had vast resources of capital behind him. He's not interested particularly in the fares that he would get from passengers on those trolleys. He's interested in the upbuilding of the land and the rising value of the land by bringing transportation, hydroelectricity, water, other infrastructural things to that land. So he stretches the basin out by way of land speculation, and much of the early, before the Second World War, suburbanization of the basin is thanks to Huntington.
Talk to us about the exhibition that they're celebrating their centennial now.
Well, it's very interesting. The building is founded in 1919. There's a year of fun stuff to celebrate that. Then there's this exhibition that is called 1919. In that exhibition are around 300 items culled from this massive collection
mm-hmm.
that in one way or another mark 1919. The curators, James Glisson, Jennifer Watts, have decided to explore a bunch of themes, what they're calling fight the war, return, soldiers coming back from the war, mapping. There's a really interesting focus on mapping that became so developed in that period, and a fascinating map, actually, of one of Huntington's streetcar lines, 37 feet long, this map is. Then they have move,
wow.
that is a transportation, innovation in transportation. Then they have build, and by that they're referring to the building of the Huntington itself. So it's a little bit high concept.
Okay. Really cool information. I know a lot more about Huntington now. The 1919 Centennial Exhibition at the Huntington opens next week. Frances Anderson hosts KCRW's DNA, giving us a look into the world of design and architecture Tuesdays right after Greater LA, right here on KCRW. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Jared.
I can't possibly be the only person who did not know about the Huntington. Stop judging. I can hear you through the radio. Want to shout out to our team here, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, PJ Shahamat, and Christian Bordal, who make this show happen. You can hear it on KCRW, as you do right now, or on KCRW.com/GreaterLA. Our podcast is available pretty shortly. There's so much great content on our website. You're not going to want to miss it. Coming up next is All the President's Lawyers. I'm Jerry Hill, sitting in for Steve Chiatakis. I really appreciate it. As my mom would say, if you see someone without a smile, give them one of yours. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.